Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Illinois, supporting the next generation of farmers with the Fresh Roots Young and Beginning Farmer Program, offering lending assistance and learning incentives to equip today's newest farmers for a healthy start in their farming careers.
From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 11th day of September 2018, a windblown day here in West Fargo, North Dakota, on the site of the Big Iron Farm Show. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up on this Tuesday afternoon, we'll talk with a couple of analysts, including Dwayne Busey. He is with Bolt Marketing out of Britton, South Dakota. Jason Winter will be here as well from Advanced Trading. He's in their office, which normally we think of as in Bloomington, Illinois, but their office right here in Fargo, North Dakota. And then a bit later in the program, we'll hear from Undersecretary for the United States Department of Agriculture, Bill Northey, who heads up FSA, RMA, and NRCS, and how mitigation payments may be made through the FSA office, as well as what the plans for shrinking that agency might look like. And we'll also talk with Heidi Heidkamp, Senator from North Dakota. She was on site this morning with our good friends at the Red River Farm Network and has some interesting thoughts on trade as well as the Farm Bill. And that'll all happen right here on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report, a production of Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Here are how the numbers finished up in Chicago with the settlement prices for this Tuesday afternoon. Corn today down a quarter of a cent. It finished at 355 and a quarter. December 366 and three quarters, a half lower. The March down three quarters at 378 and a half, and the May futures at 386 and a half, down a quarter. July contract in the corn at 392, down a half, and next year's December, 397, finished a penny lower. July beans, rather September beans, down 13 and a quarter at $8.20 and a quarter. November at 831 and three quarters, 13 and a half lower. January at 845 and a half, down 13 and a half cents, and May futures at 870, finished 13 and a quarter lower. July soybeans, a settlement price, down 13 and a half at $8.79 and a quarter. Next year's November at $8.85 and three quarters, down 13 cents. The bean oil futures 30 cents lower on the day. The bean meal down $1.70 for the afternoon. Soft red winter wheat in the July down 8 at 552 and a half. The hard red at 557 and a half, down 7 cents for the day. October live cattle at 109.30, 85 lower. The feeder cattle down 40 cents at 152.12 and a half. And lean hogs at 54.47 and a half, $1.47 and a half cents lower. You're listening, of course, to the Closing Market Report. The Dow Jones Industrial Average now at 26,010. That's up 105 points. The S&P at 2891.5 is up 11.25 points. And the U.S. dollar at 95.215 is 0.105 higher. Gold futures on the afternoon at $1,196.50. Up $2 even for the day. Here's what the weather forecast looks like for the Urbana-Champaign area as it comes from meteorologist Andrew Pritchard for the afternoon. He says we'll see tonight and this evening a low under clear skies of 55 degrees out of a southeast wind at about 5 miles an hour. Tomorrow mostly sunny, a high of 77, east winds at 5, and tomorrow evening clear skies, a low of 58, east winds at 5, and for Thursday mostly sunny, a high of 81 degrees on Thursday in the Urbana-Champaign area, and we'll have an east wind at about 5 miles an hour. Thursday evening, the National Weather Service tells us that we'll have clear skies, we'll drop to 59, and east-northeast wind by then, again, 5 miles an hour. It'll calm down even more than that after midnight and bring us Friday sunny skies and 84 degrees, Friday night clear skies and 61, and Saturday sunny and 84. By the time we get to Saturday evening, clear skies 63 for a sunny Sunday, a high of 86 degrees, and Sunday evening a clear low of 64 degrees. On Monday, to start the work week, sunny skies and a high near 85 degrees. We'll take a more complete look at the weather forecast when we get to the bottom of this half hour. We'll talk with Don Day. He's a day weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming. Again, we're here in Fargo, actually West Fargo, North Dakota, at the Big Iron Farm Show. Thanks to all those who have dropped by to say hello to us. There are a few of you out there that have been listening, and we do appreciate that. More in just a moment from West Fargo, North Dakota. Well, we're here in West Fargo at the Big Iron Show this week. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Wayne Nelson, I couldn't quite get hold of. However, there are a couple of folks here, naturally, at an agricultural show that we might want to talk to. Dwayne Bussey is here. He's from Britton, South Dakota, and boat marketing, along with Jason Winter, who is with ATI, or Advanced Trading Incorporated. They're out of Bloomington, Illinois, but he's headquartered right here in Fargo. Thanks to the both of you for joining us. Jason, I want to talk with you first, because we heard a couple things, or we will shortly on the show. I've already heard them today, about North Dakota farmers and the impact that the trade and tariffs the Trump administration is working through at this point has had on them. Something like 2/3 to 70% of the soybeans from this part of the world go out the PNW. We know that. They have a really wide basis. Normally at this time of year, with my conversations with Frayne Olson from NDSU, they might be at $1.50 under, and they're actually there. Though they're, I think, going to widen out maybe to as much as $2. So this has had a big impact. I'm wondering what that means for soybeans here, because it looks like they're not going to have a home, and how that might back up, in your opinion, into the rest of the Midwest.
Yes, it's going to be a tougher situation than what we've seen the last 9-10 years. We have, like you just said, we've got basis anywhere from $1.50. I've seen out west $1.75, but a good chunk of our soybeans do go out to the west, PNW, and most of those commercial elevators out there have just been, they've been no bid. I think they've mostly been kind of like what we're all doing, kind of waiting to see if we can get this thing hammered out yet between between us and the Chinese on all this. So, but I guess right now we're, you know, it's, I think we're going to find some space out there that hasn't been used for quite a few years. And when I'm talking with some of my guys, we put a little wheat in the bin, but the wheat crop was kind of average this year. So, and we're going to put that, we're talking to a few guys about maybe moving the wheat if we can find an opportunity there, and then refilling that space back up with beans. But
Dwayne, I'll ask you sort of the same question. I was out yesterday past a bin site with 5 bins. They were 55,000 bushels. There are a lot of bins there. I talked to the farmer who owned them. He will put a lot of soybeans in those and wait the storage out. But they may be waiting a lot longer this year than they have in the past.
Well, right. That's definitely our fear. You know, normally up here, we like to move the soybeans at harvest if we can, get our cash flow needs, and we like to store the corn maybe longer than we should sometimes, like the last 2 years. But yeah, this bean thing, you're right. Right now, from what I understand, and Jason knows a lot more than I do, but the PNW sounds like they're nearly full. They don't have a bid. I've even heard of a local elevator that has a couple of rail cars lined up, trains that go out there, and ADM doesn't want them. They're offering them cash, pennies per bushel, to not take them, just leave them there. So I'm worried. I don't know what'll happen. This basis, I'm hoping, stays at this $1.50, $1.60, but I'm worried about space. I'm worried about some elevators might just take as much as they can, and when they're full, and that's it. So I was joking with Jason earlier. We kind of drive by farm sites and see a 3,000 bushel bin, and it's like, God, there's a lot of weeds around that. That's maybe been empty for a few years. I think you should go talk to that farmer about renting those bushels, that space, because I just don't want to bring anything to town that isn't pre-harvest sold already.
And a lot of that space, when we had such good corn prices, got built to store corn. Now, there's actually a corn program out west. I mean, the corn bids are not too bad. They fob back at some decent values, and we've got ethanol here, you know, where we don't have a bean processing plant anywhere close to here, but we've got ethanol. And so this year, I think, I mean, really the market's telling them to use some of that space the past few years that they've used for corn and put beans in it and move the corn to town instead. So the other thing that might help us, unfortunately, help us out a little bit, I've heard, we've started to see a little harvest here. I'm hearing some yields in the 50-ish in the southeast corner, but I work with some guys all the way out to Minot. Those guys have been growing 40, 45 bushel beans the last few years. They're getting in their fields. They haven't had hardly a drop of rain all of August, and they're seeing 25, 30 bushel beans. So the bean crop in North Dakota is not, I don't think it's near where it's been the last few years. So,
given that, there'll still be a lot of beans here, and yes, they don't have a home. And the basis potentially widens out. That sounds to me like it's going to back things up all the way through the Midwest, and where 57 under for a bid on Monday was the last cash bid I looked at for my local elevator. It seems to me that could even get wider there.
Yes, I would agree. It's I mean, just not having the Chinese for export demand, it's gonna have a domino effect really across the country, from the river all the way, you know, through the rail markets basically. So
it really means that producers are going to have to do a much, much better job of marketing a corn crop that actually remains pretty low priced too.
Right. I think what it might make some of our clients do is, like Jason was saying, our basis is not that bad for corn. And remember, once you move this product, sell it, the basis is done. Jason and I can't help anymore after that. The basis is locked in. So with the basis being decent for corn, maybe you want to take some of your usual corn space, sell that corn, and then store the beans there, because, boy, nobody wants to settle for this $1.60 bean basis. So, and you're right, your basis down your way, believe it or not, will start to feel the effect of the domino flow. As we fill up here and our basis is bad, we'll just ship them south. I've also heard of Fargo, North Dakota beans going to St. Louis, believe it or not. So I don't think that's ever happened before, but it probably is going to this fall.
When you look further down the road, do you see problems building in January or July? Because I don't think producers, or maybe May, producers won't hold beans that long in the bin. They don't store nearly as well as corn. Could that create a second harvest problem when producers are really thinking, I need some time? And do they need, in that case, to consider the November or December timeframe for marketing on potentially a problem in South America?
Well, we know once grain gets put in the bin, it has a hard time coming back out of the bin. So it could, I mean, if the market does a good job, I think, as far as basis and probably some higher DP charges, getting the farmers to store beans in the bin, eventually, I mean, I want to be optimistic that eventually maybe we see something happen, or at least the Chinamen, you know, have to come back to the U.S. to buy some beans, where we get all these beans back in the bin. There's going to be some opportunities. One thing we don't want to going in the future, we know South America, they're seeing some of the best prices they've seen in quite a few years. So they're going to be for surely planting more beans. And so there could be a big disaster if South America has a big bean crop again come February, March, April. And then we still got a lot of beans in the bin. That could be a major issue coming up in the near future. So
that could be a tough issue, especially if the Trump administration, who has said we're going to take a tough line and not settle with China, doesn't actually settle with China very soon.
Yeah, and sadly, that's what it looks like right now. Earlier this summer, I was saying that I think by fall we'll get something figured out, and that was me just completely guessing, and it looks like that's going to be wrong. You know, China needs our beans, but also, I mean, they're going to dig their heels in probably just as much as our president will as well. The only nice thing is here with these markets, we're down hard today, right? You know, we're looking at a report tomorrow, probably a negative report. If we drop down to some support line, some old support level like 796, if I'm looking at the price in Brazil and the price at our ports, I think at that point we would actually price the 25% tariff in, and I think we'll start moving some beans even with the tariff still in place. I think that'll be just very healthy for this market to set that long-term bottom. But like to Jason's point, with the crop size we've got coming, we're not going to bounce back $2 to where people want us to be anytime soon. And unless we have a weather scare in Brazil, then, you know, everything we said today just goes out the window.
Gentlemen, thank you so much. Dwayne Busey, of course, is from Britain, South Dakota. He is with Bolt Marketing. And Jason Winter is with ATI, or Advanced Trading, and he's from right here in the Fargo area of North Dakota. Well, I'm here in North Dakota, West Fargo, in fact, at the Big Iron Show, and Bill Northey is here. He's Undersecretary at the United States Department of Agriculture, heading up three organizations: FSA, the Farm Service Agency, RMA, the Risk Management Agency, and NRCS, of course, over conservation. Bill, thanks for joining me here. Let's start by discussing how this reorganization happened, where you ended up being over three parts of the agency.
Yeah, so Secretary Perdue, when he came into office, probably a year and a half ago now, really wanted to be able to put these three agencies that deal directly with farmers almost all the time together. NRCS was separate, FSA and RMA were together with Foreign Ag Service as well. And so this premise was all the organizations that work with farmers should be in the same shop. And I think it's been a great approach. We have a lot of county offices out there where FSA and NRCS were in the same office. They all got along anyway. But sometimes the policies were different. We developed different software because it came from different mission areas and different computer technologists in each of those. Now we're going to do it together in a way that maintains that continuity across those agencies. Each still will have the same things they've always dealt with. FSA will still deal with CRP and farm loans and farm programs. NRCS will still be conservation. RMA still dealing with crop insurance. But we're going to coordinate more of the policies and certainly even some of our administrative function as time goes on too, Todd.
So this is the beginnings of some of the reorganization that Secretary Perdue would like to take place. ERS has been announced to be potentially moving out of Washington, D.C. They're already looking for new homes for that organization. Farmers will be wondering about FSA offices. They always are at the county level. And whether is any indication, as comes up periodically, that this USDA, under Secretary Perdue, will look to shrink the number of agency offices.
You know, we don't have any plans for that now. We are doing kind of an analysis of understanding what our workload is. So you can imagine we have 2,145 NRCS or FSA offices across the country, and nearly the same, a little bit more for NRCS. It is tough figuring out where do we put our 10,000 people that we have out there. If we have, you know, 100 new people or 1,000 new people to be able to put in offices, which offices need those? Every place is pretty much short-staffed. So we're trying to do an analysis that helps us with that, even trying to figure out if there's kind of a right size office that allows you enough skills to be able to cover all the different conservation areas or all the different farm program areas. So we're trying to crunch some numbers, trying to figure out how many miles offices are between each other. Maybe at the end of that, we'll have some ways of being able to understand how do we make sure that we serve our producers better in the long run. But short term, nothing planned, certainly no targets, no numbers that would suggest that we need any less people in the field or that we need our offices in a different spot. We'll approach that if we come across methods. We're also trying to add to the availability of some of these programs online. Farmers.gov is going to offer opportunities for folks to sign up for more of our programs, access their program information online as well. We want to make sure that the Secretary is focused on customer service. That means we need more and better ways to deliver that. Certainly not less people, but more tools for folks.
One of those customer service items has been announced by the Secretary as it relates to trade and mitigation payments that are coming in compensation for the policies that the Trump administration is working through, in particular with China. Soybean producers, corn producers will be signing their production up. That'll come, I believe, through FSA offices. Can you tell me a little bit about how that needs to happen or should happen at the FSA office and what the farmer will want to do and maybe what the landlord will need to do as well?
So sign up is open right now. So folks can go to FSA offices and what they need is 2018 production for crops, for dairy. That's the margin protection production numbers, which most of them provided to FSA earlier this summer. For pork, it is the number of pigs that they had on hand August 1st. But for the crops, the five crops, corn, soybeans, wheat, sorghum, and cotton, it's 2018 production. So if they walk into the office, post that production, whatever it is, if they're done with wheat harvest, they walk into the office, tell us what their yield is, sign that they certify that's what their yield and that they have the information at home. They don't need to bring that information to the office, but just tell us what that number is. We'll be able to multiply it times the price for that production. In case of wheat, it's 14 cents a bushel times half of that production. And we'll get a check on their way as soon as it gets through a county committee within a week or so. So it should just require one visit if they would like to per crop, or they can wait and do all the crops at once if they'd like. And doesn't require more steps than that, just needs their 2018 production for those crops.
One last question, because this is good for half of the production, at least at this point, one half, and then there may be a second round if needed. What parameters will USDA use to make that decision?
Yeah, we'll look at what our trade situation is, what the tariff situation is at that time. It'll be probably in November or early December that we do that analysis. We all hope by that time we don't have trade issues and we don't need a second half payment. But we will look at that again and try and determine that we probably, at least to start with, would lean towards the same kind of 2018 production number. After all, people will have those numbers in. We'll probably always look to see if there's other crops that need to be covered, but unless others come forward with more tariffs, we'll probably have the pool of crops right now. But we'll look at the tariff impact at that time and try and analyze. In the long run, we need to get back to trade. This is a short-term program. We'd ask folks, don't depend on this happening next year. I sure hope it doesn't even have to happen again in December. But it was important to recognize that farmers are absolutely being impacted by this trade situation, and we need to be able to respond and help to some degree. Not going to make people whole, but it'll help a little bit soften some of that blow.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Todd. Appreciate it.
That, of course, is Undersecretary Bill Northey from the United States Department of Agriculture. When we come back, we'll hear from Senator Heidi Heitkamp. She has a new title for herself. You're going to want to hear about it. Senator Heitkamp, what's the compromise on the farm bill? It needs to be done by the end of the month.
Well, I think the compromise is that we all sit down, go title to title, and try and bridge the gaps, try and understand what we're trying to do. You know, I don't think there's any disagreement on principle, and once we agree on what needs to be done, I think we should be able to get a compromise, but it's back and forth. And you know, it's always going to be a little rough in the beginning as people are tramping on the ground. I think eventually, hopefully, we'll get this done by September.
You told farmers here that they've been hurt more by the soybean tariff than others that China has put on. Why is that the case?
Because we have basis and most of our soybeans go to the West and there's zero orders. You just heard a farmer today saying his basis is going up to $2. That's unheard of. That's almost double what is typical at this point in time. And so, I mean, to get 85 cents on per bushel on your crop doesn't even cover what's happened on basis, never mind the fact that you're not getting the a price that is at all what was all predictable this spring.
So what's the fix for basis, or how do we handle that situation for us who are more landlocked?
Well, I think what we have to do is we have to demand that Secretary Perdue, in his trade aid package, look at basis differentials as part of what we're trying to get accomplished here. We can't simply be one size fits all, which is exactly what that package is, and that's why I wrote the letter asking him to reconsider. We've got to end this trade war, or at least we have to take soybeans off the tip of the spear. We have to make sure that soybeans aren't collateral damage. And everybody who says, well, it's short-term pain, let me tell you, this got long-term ramifications, even if it only goes on for, you know, a year.
Senator, the other thing you mentioned is the fact that canola follows soybeans for price, yep, and it's not included in the aid package.
Well, we asked Secretary Perdue to take a look at canola. We're going to continue to fight for canola. This is coming at the same time that we see threats on the horizon to our biodiesel industry, which has a huge effect on canola prices as well. And so we've got to represent North Dakota. You know, everybody says, well, what are you going to do about apple and loss of... I said, apple's doing really well last time I checked. Right? They're now a $1 trillion company. And soybeans are supposed to take the hit so that Apple doesn't have intellectual property stolen? I mean, it just doesn't seem equitable to me. And I, you know, like I said, I've turned into the chief bitcher.
Well, there you go. That's Senator Heidi Heitkamp from the great state of North Dakota. When we come back, we'll talk with Don Day at Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming, here on the Closing Market Report. I'm Todd Gleason at the Big Iron Show in West Fargo.
It's National Hot Cross Bun Day. This sweet spiced bun first was named in 1733. The hot cross bun was a source of controversy. Protestant English monarchs saw the buns as a dangerous holdover of Catholic belief. The buns baked from the dough used to make communion wafers. Protestant England attempted to ban their sale, but they proved too popular. So Elizabeth I passed a law allowing their sale, but only on Easter and Christmas. On this day in agricultural history in 1721, Rudolf Jacob Camemarius died, a German botanist. He showed the existence of sexes in plants and identified the stamen and pistil as the male and female organs. In 1851, Sylvester Graham died. He advocated vegetarianism, temperance, and the use of coarse-ground whole wheat flour. But he was best known for the invention of the graham cracker in 1829. In addition to whole wheat flour, Graham advocated hard mattresses, open windows, fresh fruits and vegetables, pure drinking water, and cheerfulness at meals. And in 1961, the World Wildlife Fund, a conservation organization, was founded. And that's this day in agricultural history.
Support for this market report on WILL comes from Busey. For 150 years, Busey has helped business owners and entrepreneurs navigate financial decisions, achieve long-term goals, and realize dreams of success. Busey, fulfilling dreams since 1868.
Well, you're listening to the Closing Market Report for this Tuesday afternoon. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, coming to you today from the Big Iron Show in West Fargo, North Dakota. We're now joined by Don Day. He's at Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming. Hey, good afternoon to you, Don. Thanks for being with us.
Good to be here.
So let's start with Florence, way out on the East Coast. Tell me the kind of damage that we expect and where it will make landfall if we have a good idea at this point.
Well, this far out, I think we certainly need to be cautious on not pinpointing the track exactly yet with what the computer models are doing. But without a doubt, North Carolina and South Carolina under the gun the most. This storm system is definitely going to have some big, big impacts. Our biggest thing that we're watching is the potential for some very heavy rains. Although we do think Florence will weaken rather rapidly after landfall, there could be areas 24, 30 inches of rain or more along the mid-Atlantic, and the flooding may be the biggest problem with this hurricane.
And then does it have an impact in the Midwest? It seems to me that it might hold dry weather conditions for farmers, especially the further west you go in the Corn Belt.
That is right. I think we certainly need to watch the remnants of Florence and the possibility of maybe getting the eastern Corn Belt with some rain. But the central, northern, and western Corn Belt has begun a drying trend that here for another 5 to 7 days should persist. We do see the chances of rain coming back into the forecast the week after next in the Midwest, but there is a dry period coming up that I think will be very beneficial.
And then after that, what do you see for the end of the month of September? Do you have a crystal ball for us when producers will really be rolling through harvest?
Well, I tell you right now, what we're seeing is basically summer getting extended well through the second half of September. I think right when we get to the end of the month, the first week of October, we've had some pretty good signals showing us that there should be some colder air getting cut loose, a more active weather pattern, but it may wait till that first week of October before moving in.
Okay, thanks so much. We appreciate you being with us for the day.
Thank you.
Don Day is with Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming. Joins us on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason. Thank you for joining us this afternoon. Again, we're at the Big Iron Farm Show in West Fargo, North Dakota today. Tomorrow, the United States Department of Agriculture will update both the crop production and world agricultural supply and demand estimate reports. Be sure to visit our website at willag.org at 11 a.m. Central Time. You'll find those numbers changing there at that point, and I'll try to post my Twitter feed at Commodity Week there as well, so you'll see them as quickly as I can get them posted. It won't be long after 11, within the first couple of minutes, for you to see those numbers, and then during the Closing Market Report, we'll take them up with Jackie Bakes from Stuart Peterson. I'm Todd Gleason in West Fargo, North Dakota. You have a great afternoon.